Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at FanRag Sports and the host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. 331-979-1369 is our line to text and call. We're doing mailbag tomorrow, an entire episode just of your questions and your voicemail. So make sure you get those in today or early tomorrow morning. That's 331-979-1369 for all your questions, your voicemails. If you want to hit us up on social media, on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, you can do that there. Doing mailbag tomorrow, so make sure you get all of your questions in. So, Matt, no NBA Finals till Wednesday night, letting me stew a little bit more on what the Bulls could possibly do at 7, what this report about Trae Young and Colin Sexton means, as well as Mikal Bridges and Wendell Carter Jr. working out for the Bulls on Monday. It's brought me to kind of a weird place. I feel like, for one, I think I've come to terms with figuring out how things can maybe position themselves if they do in fact take somebody like Trae Young, or they go the safe route and take Mikal Bridges, or they go for the home run in the biggest risk of them all in Michael Porter Jr. How are you feeling right now?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I just kind of, and I'm sure this is how a lot of Bulls fans feel, I'm just ready for June 21st to hurry up and get here. I feel like we've talked a lot of these possible Bulls picks to death, and I feel like at this point, we're all on edge because of the fact that at 7, we don't really know what we'll get. And it seems like at 7, most likely the Bulls are going to miss out on what people deem to be the top tier players in this draft. And the one exception to that would be if Michael Porter Jr. slides to the Bulls at 7, because Mo Bamba is taken, and maybe somebody takes a chance with Trae Young, Orlando at 6, as we've discussed. And then it just becomes a very worrisome element of, okay, the Bulls actually maybe got one of the best players in this draft at a position of need, sliding Michael Porter Jr. into the Bulls' wing spot that is so desperately lacking right now. But the guy with maybe the biggest potential upside also comes with the biggest possible risk and the biggest draft bust likelihood, because of the fact that he is a young one-and-done player with a back problem. So I think that's why a lot of Bulls fans are on edge right now, because at 7, it's an iffy position. I think a lot of people have sort of, at this point, given up on the idea that the Bulls can somehow trade into the top 4. I've been saying that since day one, that it's not going to happen. And now it's just, as you highlighted, you know, threw out some of those names, it's, are the Bulls going to play it safe? In which case, Bulls fans will all kind of just be disappointed and unenthused about the upcoming season. Or are Bulls fans going to say, wow, we actually got Michael Porter Jr., didn't think that was possible, but now we all just have to cross our fingers and pray that he actually will turn out to be a good thing for the Bulls and not a bust. So I think that's why there's just, everybody's on edge right now, because at 7, there are so many question marks.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like 1 through 6, the names are pretty much obvious right there. You know, whoever you're going to take is probably going to be a lot of the same six guys, just depending on where people slide. Seven, really, especially in this draft, is where the volatility, it becomes even more prevalent. And the Bulls, unfortunately, when they slid back from being sixth favorite in the lottery, they dropped back to seven. This kind of has put them in that class of second tier players. I know a lot of people said that there might be a class of tier one players going 1 through 3 or 1 through 4, and then really tier two starts at pick number 5 or the 5th overall best prospect. I feel like that you could even extend that all the way to the first 6 picks. Like, those guys could be considered tier one players, and really where the Bulls find themselves stuck a little bit is having options for the best player in the tier two, talking about Wendell Carter and Michael Porter and Mikal Bridges, and even if you want to throw Trae Young in there, which I think still Trae Young could be considered a borderline tier one, maybe tier two player. He's kind of on the border for me. But I think you're right. I think it's been so much talk and so many different prospects and so many different avenues that the Bulls can go in, with smoke screens going out about talking about how they really like Colin Sexton and Trae Young. They also, there's been connections with Michael Porter Jr., and we've also heard that they really like Wendell Carter Jr. too. So it's kind of a mixed bag. At seven, and where the Bulls are at, talking about the age of Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, and Lauri Markkanen, maybe it is more advantageous for them to take a more ready-made player at 22 years old rather than a project at 19. But I don't know. To me, I feel like I would rather have 5 years of control on a guy that's coming in at only 19 years old rather than 22. I don't know how you feel about that, though.
Yeah, and the other thing that kind of makes me worry, and I guess not worry, but less enthused about Mikal Bridges, and I guess kind of takes me by surprise when I listen to his interviews, and he did an interview with Chuck Swirsky for Bulls TV at his visit earlier this week. For a guy who is, as you said, almost 22 years old and spent 3 years playing at Nova, two-time national champion, a guy who has already seen a lot of the media spotlight, I do not think that Mikal Bridges is either, I don't think he's very, he doesn't strike me as very intelligent, and he doesn't strike me as being well-spoken. And I know that that's probably not what Bulls fans are most concerned about. So I don't care if the guy can form a proper sentence. I just want him to be able to play basketball really well. Still, to me, it was a bit of an alarm that younger guys like Wendell Carter, guys like Mo Bamba, when talking to the media at these Bulls visits, struck me as already being much more intelligent and media savvy than Mikal Bridges, who is a 3-year player at Nova and several years older than those guys. So there's not just the factor that Mikal Bridges is kind of the boring pick at a position of need, but to me, I don't, for all of his experience, and not just in multiple years at college, but multiple years at a national attention-grabbing school like Nova, a program like Nova, he doesn't seem to me like a kid who's ready for the NBA, which at 22 is kind of alarming. He just seems like every interview I've watched of him, deer in headlights, doesn't make eye contact, doesn't speak confidently. And that, again, is not necessarily a huge factor on determining how good of a basketball player he is, but it is a factor, and it's one that I care about.
The other thing that I was going to touch on, just to kind of counter your point there, I think the one thing about Mikal Bridges that strikes me as a positive is he went from being a redshirt freshman to now being talked as a NBA lottery pick here, and he talked about that a little bit in his interviews, and I know just reading over some of the things that Jay Wright has said over the 3 years that Mikal Bridges is there, well, really 4 years that he's been there, because they redshirted him as a freshman. I think it was kind of cool to read what Mikal Bridges said about his first year at Nova, and saying that he felt like his game was weak, his body was weak, he wasn't really ready to play at that point, but took a lot of advice from Jay Wright and his coaching staff and worked really hard to be able to turn out to what he was in his final year, and then being a two-time national championship between that and watching him kind of progress in college. I really like that about him. And look, I don't need a player that
maybe necessarily is really great with the media. That's things that can be learned, and that's things that can be coached. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, Jordan. How frustrated were Bulls fans throughout the entire Derrick Rose experience and saga when he said something stupid to the media that was misinterpreted and blown out of proportion?
It's true. It's true. I will give you
outside
that.
Outside of Derrick Rose, the great player before the injuries, that was the thing that people were bothered by the most. And then as his injuries became more and more of a problem, the way he spoke about those injuries and the way he spoke to the media, Bulls fans dragged him through the mud and hated him and ragged on him simply because the kid was not well-spoken and not very intelligent. It is a factor when you're talking about kids that are being brought into an organization fresh-faced. And to me, look, I agree with you in that Mikal Bridges showed to have a tremendous work ethic going from being a redshirt freshman to a very important player on a championship-caliber Villanova team. But the intelligence and the media savvy, it's something that Bulls fans have had to endure with one of their best players in recent memory, and it sucked.
You're right. And no, I agree with you. And I don't think you're necessarily saying this is the end-all, be-all, but it does play a factor. And
No, just a factor that right now I'm worried about with Mikal Bridges.
And it's true. You kind of have to have tough skin when you're playing in the city. I mean, look at the scrutiny that Chicago fans and even the media places on a lot of players, not even just in the NBA, but just in this city in general. I think you have to have thick skin, and you've got to have a mind for being able to kind of block out the media at times and block out what the fans are saying. And I can understand what you're saying. If he is mentally strong enough to play in a Bulls uniform here for the long term and be an important piece to this team, I can understand it where you might be a little bit worried there. I wouldn't buy too much into it. I think that there's players in this league that are very soft-spoken, that don't want to talk, don't have a lot to say. And there are also guys like maybe Mohamed Bamba, who we saw, who will give you 10 to 12 headline writing stories and is very well-spoken. Go back to when I interviewed OG Anunoby. He was the most soft-spoken, I'm going to say more with less. And to me, I mean, I feel like people would say the same thing about Mikal Bridges. And now, I haven't talked personally to Mikal Bridges at all, but I can see sort of the comparison there. But you're right. It does play a factor. I mean, if you want to go out.
And it plays a factor with this front office.
True.
This front office is all about high character guys. And I mean, Derrick Rose at number one was kind of the exception to the rule there, because it's not like Derrick had a bad character coming into that draft, but there were the questions about his academic eligibility from Memphis, and that turned out to be a giant story. And then, you know, all the weird things that we've learned about Derrick Rose since then, including the, you know, the sexual assault accusations that were thrown at him just a couple of years ago. So the Bulls front office always looks for high character guys. And to me, as you said, and it's not so much the fact that Mikal Bridges, oh, well, yeah, a lot of kids are nervous and not good around media coming into being NBA draft prospects to get a lot of attention. But this is a 3-year, as you said, 4-year kid at Nova. And he looks to me to be less comfortable in the spotlight than kids who are younger than he is. So to me, like, that's what I was saying. It's because the Bulls are always so high on those multi-year guys and high character guys. To me, that's a distinction you have to make with Mikal Bridges. Multi-year guy, yes. But from what I have seen, not the kind of high character guy that the Bulls front office usually looks to take in these drafts.
Yeah, and I think that could more come from just well-trained with the media, maybe as some of these other players are, guys that have been in high school and had that spotlight on them, maybe like some prospects like Trae Young or Mohamed Bamba, who have been dealing with this since they were, what, 15, 16 years old. And we look at Mikal Bridges. He went into Villanova and redshirted his freshman year. He was never really in the spotlight. Yeah, he was a 4-star player going into college, and I think he was ranked number 82 by ESPN in the top 100 back in 2013 when he decided to join Villanova. So there is a little bit of a difference in some of the guys that are top recruits going to top schools and having the spotlight on them the entire year, and maybe even beyond that in high school as well. So I think you can make the distinction there as well. But I'm with you. I think that's right too. And I don't necessarily think that you need a guy that needs to be very well trained with the media. I think you've got enough guys on this Bulls team that can kind of overshadow that. I just wonder if the pressure of playing in this city and maybe some of the scrutiny that's going to come along with that, because there's going to be highs and lows from all these players over the next 2-3 years. So whether or not he is strong enough to handle some of that scrutiny, I don't know, because Villanova has been good every year he was there. And maybe you can attest him being redshirted his freshman year and being told that he wasn't good enough to be on this roster just yet and going and working hard and being able to play himself into a starting role in his final 2 years at Villanova. Maybe that says something about his character as well, and not just the way maybe he's spoken to the media. So both sides there are very interesting.
That's fair. But, you know, and to wrap up that talk, let's just also remember that when Markkanen was drafted 7th last year, Bulls fans immediately trashed him all over social media. Oh my God, what a terrible pick. Oh my God, this is going to be a bust. Oh my God, another soft Euro player. This is terrible. This is awful. Markkanen, also a soft-spoken individual, managed to handle all of that and prove a lot of his haters and doubters wrong in his rookie year. So if it is Mikal Bridges, I will be very interested to see what kind of mental fortitude he has, because you know that a lot of Bulls fans, if he is the pick, are going to say, oh, God, this is what we get for tanking for a year. He's going to have to deal with that.
Let's take a quick break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Wendell Carter, because he worked out alongside Mikal Bridges on Monday. And we'll talk a little bit about his game, maybe some of his reaction to his meeting with the media and so forth. Stay right here with us on Locked On Bulls. We'll be right back. All right, so to go to the flip side of what the Bulls normally do as far as going to the draft, taking, like we had talked about, 3-4 year players, guys with high character, Wendell Carter Jr. is another interesting name. Obviously doesn't really fit the bill of what the Bulls normally draft or their timeline of drafting over the last maybe 10, 15 years. Him being a one-year player at Duke, playing around a lot of different top prospects, highly recruited players at Duke, playing alongside Marvin Bagley, who's going to go short before Wendell Carter Jr. What do you make of his game? I know we've talked extensively on and off about his game, but any comments that stood out to you by Wendell Carter Jr. and what you think, if the Bulls are this interested in taking a big man, him playing alongside Lauri Markkanen, and maybe what Bulls fans don't understand about Wendell Carter's game or the ceiling that Wendell Carter has?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is, while undersized for traditional centers, he's listed at 6'10", he could be a very good fit alongside Markkanen in the Bulls front court in the modern NBA, where you're seeing more and more teams going with smaller players at the center position. And like, the traditional center has gone by the wayside. His words at his Bulls workout were encouraging to me. He seems to be a kid who knows what he can do. And he, you know, he talked about the advice he got from Coach K, the head coach at Duke, about what to do and how to prepare as he's going through all these various processes with the draft, and saying, show these teams what you can do and worry about the improvements you need to make in certain elements to your game once you get drafted and know where you are and where you'll be for the beginning of your NBA career. And he said a lot of things about doing the dirty work and the little things and being a high character glue guy on a team and, you know, playing defense and setting good picks and diving after loose balls and making the extra pass, making the correct pass. And to me, I think Bulls are high on him because high character guy, high basketball IQ. Even for a kid who just turned 19, what, like a month ago, month and a half ago, and who really was playing behind the spotlight of Marvin Bagley for his 1 year at Duke, he seems to be a kid with a strong head on his shoulders who knows what he can do at the NBA level as a modern big. And he needs to work on expanding that range of his game, but the potential is there. and all the other things about what you want in a modern NBA center, I think Carter Jr. has a lot of those things at his disposal. I wouldn't mind at all seeing a Bulls front court that consisted of Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. I like this kid a lot.
I do too, and I think he's one of the players in this draft that isn't that flashy of a name, or people write him off because he hasn't been talked about maybe as highly as some of these other guys have that are gonna maybe go in the top 10. I think he's one of those names alongside Mikal Bridges where Bulls fans kind of roll their eyes at and say, I don't know about this kid, just because I don't think they've heard enough or saw enough of Wendell Carter Jr. to really have an opinion about him. My thing here is, just looking over his stats, there's a couple things that stood out to me. First of all, playing alongside Marvin Bagley, Wendell Carter Jr. still had half of his games he played in at least a double-double. And there was five games where he's had 15 or more rebounds, all of those coming in conference play in the ACC.
He almost averaged a double-double on the season, 13.5 and 9.1.
Which is crazy to think about because you're playing alongside a guy like Marvin Bagley, who you would feel like takes up most of the offensive firepower on that team, and also trying to decide whether or not and where to share the ball and how to play alongside some of the guys that Duke did have. Like, you got to still think, the college basketball player that Grayson Allen was, he was a four-year player there. He was one of the number one options as far as offense on that Duke team. So was Marvin Bagley, and there's a couple other guys you can talk about too, Gary Trent Jr. being on this team. To me, taking a look at Wendell Carter Jr.'s college stats, I think only tells you a sliver of really about what his NBA potential is. Because think about it, playing alongside three or four guys in college that maybe are highly ranked and trying to figure out how to win as a basketball team, especially at a winning program like Duke, I feel like sometimes guys are really put in a position more so in terms of how to win in college basketball, maybe than to let their own physical skills flourish. And I think at times you saw this with Wendell Carter Jr. The biggest knock that I have on Wendell Carter Jr. right now is his foul trouble. He gets in a ton of foul trouble. I'm looking at over his game logs, and especially in the NCAA tournament, their one loss against Kansas, which knocked Duke out of the tournament, he had five fouls. He fouled out of that game. He only had 10 points and two rebounds. One of the worst games he had as a Blue Devil in college basketball. But you look up and down the board, and there were games where he didn't play so well and he fouled out of those games. So that would be the one biggest thing that I have, is his ability to draw fouls, but also to stay out of foul trouble defensively. And I think that's going to be something key to monitor with Wendell Carter Jr.'s game. But I think he would be a great complement to what Lauri Markkanen can do. And we talked about all the things that Mohamed Bamba can help Lauri Markkanen do by, like, spreading things out on the offensive end, getting Lauri Markkanen more shots at the perimeter and not having to stay maybe so close to the basket. I think Wendell Carter Jr. can do this as well. And hey, if Wendell Carter Jr. too can develop some type of three-point shot,
and like, he does have the making to be able to do that. He only took 1.2 threes per game in his lone season at Duke, but he hit him at 41.3%. So the question is, like every college player, every college shooter, can he confidently expand that range from the college three-point line to the NBA three-point line, and can he shoot them with more regularity while keeping up that accuracy? The potential is there for him to have a reliable three-point shot at the NBA level. Your concern about the fouls is a good point, though. And it's definitely something that is a weakness to his game right now. He averaged nearly three fouls per game at the collegiate level. Remember, when you only get five, not six, and he was three fouls per game in 26 minutes per game. That being said, he also proved himself to be a very active and capable defender and rim protector, even though he is what you might say a bit undersized. He averaged 2.1 blocks per game and also nearly a steal per game. So active hands in passing lanes, and a guy who, despite only being 6'10", can prove to be a good rim protector. It's just like you said. And look, this is not a Wendell Carter specific problem. Lots of players making the leap from college to the NBA have to get over that bad habit of committing silly, stupid, unintelligent fouls. So that is a weakness in his game right now, but it is a weakness that a lot of college players have making the jump to the NBA.
15 games, Wendell Carter Jr. had four or five fouls. And you look over those games at Duke specifically, And you can tell when he gets in foul trouble, his rebounds go down, his points per game go down, his blocks, for obvious reasons too, taking out of games and maybe having to concern himself with staying out of foul trouble rather than maybe being a little bit more aggressive. I think if you go back and look at his game logs and you look at all the games that he had two or less fouls in, he dominated in those games. And he was able to stay on the floor and dominated against teams. One, you know, I'm just looking at these logs right now, 23 points and 12 rebounds, 16 points, 10 rebounds, 18 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, 20 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, 6 blocks. Like, these are games that he's staying in and feeling comfortable with. I think you get to the point, especially on early on in foul trouble for Duke, it sort of put him in a wedge where he felt maybe he had to make up for Marvin Bagley and maybe help Marvin Bagley out too and to stay out of foul trouble. So there's a lot of different factors for Wendell Carter Jr. I think the one thing, too, talking about his three-point game, that's something that I don't necessarily have to concern myself with right now, because I feel like that's something that he can develop at the NBA level if he's not completely comfortable with shooting right now. You've got Lauri Markkanen, who's one of the most pure scorers in the last 2 years to come out as a young player. I feel like he can learn a lot from Lauri Markkanen and vice versa from those guys. So the big man shooting the three, I think, could be developed. And Wendell Carter Jr. has shown a little bit of a flash in the pan that he can take those shots. Just developing that would be great, too. But a tremendous rebounder and something that the Bulls are definitely going to need, because Lauri Markkanen still has to learn how to become a better rebounder. And I think Wendell Carter Jr. can help complement that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, let's just not ignore the fact that of all of these bigs that we're talking about, I mean, Wendell Carter Jr. has the best three-point percentage among them. People are talking about how Mo Bamba looks so much better as a three-point shooter after his one season at Texas, and that there's all this video of like, oh man, Bamba in the gym nailing a bunch of threes. The Bulls, he told the media, the Bulls had him shooting a lot of threes, and he feels much more confident. He said, it's night and day how confident I am shooting the three in my one college year compared to the work I put in the offseason already. But he shot 27.5%. Wendell Carter shot 41%. So for all the hype and talk about Bamba being a better three-point shooter going to the NBA level, Wendell Carter was a much better three-point shooter in his lone season at Duke.
That's an extremely good point, and I didn't even think about that until you brought this up. So here's a little bit more of stats behind that. So Wendell Carter Jr. took 46 threes at Duke last year. Mohamed Bamba took 51. So the comparisons of taking threes and making them, that percentage there, Bulls fans, that'll be the first thing that they'll go to and ask is like, oh, well, did Mohamed Bamba take way more threes than Wendell Carter Jr. did? No. I mean, Mohamed Bamba only took 6 more threes than Wendell Carter did all season long. And like you said, the three ball was working for Wendell Carter Jr., and maybe that's just shot selection as well. I think that a good point by one of our listeners brought up too, and I don't know how you feel about this, but the fact that Mohamed Bamba said that his three-point shooting is like night and day since he ended his college basketball season at Texas. In 2 months, do you really buy into that, or do you think that's just more chatter?
Yeah, I mean, come on. Did Bulls fans ever have any faith when Nico went on a little bit of a hot shooting streak that it was going to last? Like, no. I mean, that's kind of a silly comparison, but yeah, I'm sorry. You haven't played a single NBA game yet, and 2 months of offseason, and all of a sudden you're this amazing three-point shooter. Look, it might be true, but prove it. There's no reason to get super excited about watching Bamba shoot threes in a gym unguarded. That doesn't say anything about how his three-point range will translate to the NBA level.
Agreed. So it's good points to bring up for both big men. Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts. You will find us, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Remember, we're doing mailbag tomorrow. Hit us up at 331-979-1369. Your text and voicemails are welcome there. Hit us up with your questions on social media too, Facebook and Twitter. Once again, 331-979-1369 is the line to text and call. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode and a full mailbag for you. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.